I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show, brought to you today by MTN Business. You can find MTN Business at mtnbusiness.co.za, and we thank them for partnering with the show and helping us bring you these great insights into the tech space in South Africa. You can subscribe to TCS on YouTube. Simply visit youtube.com/TechCentral, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell icon, and you'll never miss another episode. You can also find the Tech Central Show on all your favorite podcasting platforms, including Spotify. Now, we've got a very interesting interview lined up. I have two guests in the studio, and they believe they found a solution for delivering cheap, wireless, uncapped internet into high-density, low-income areas in South Africa. We're talking here about 99 Rand a month for uncapped internet capable of delivering 4K quality video. So on Sunday, I had the opportunity to spend a few hours with the team. The company is called Riot Network. We went to Olievenhout Bush, which is a sprawling township near Centurion here in Gauteng. And we're going to intersperse that visit on Sunday with some video clips from that visit. But before I carry on, let me introduce you to my guests. Jared Becker is CEO of Riot Network, and Moses Mpofu is Chief Operating Officer. Gentlemen, good to see you in the studio. Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure. Now, let's start at the beginning. Jared, what was the genesis of this project? I believe you met with Moses at WITS. Tell us the story.
Yeah, so we, our third co-founder is not here today, Daniel. So Daniel and I, we had a business which we were doing some consulting engineering, building consumer products for a number of big organizations. So we were the outsourced R&D department. And I jumped off the train the one day after resigning from my first job, walked into the Timalhang district in just outside Wits, and landed at the late Prof. Barry Dolatsky's door.
Yes.
And he was the first person to greet us. And we had to look no further. He offered us free business office space, and we set up our little shop there. And at that time, Moses was also working there. He was studying at Wits. We actually bumped into each other a few times.
Okay.
Moses has a better story around that, but so we actually worked together on a few projects, and some of the products that we were building were mostly IoT type products, and we were looking at ways that we could sort of get these things to market. And our business plan was pretty bad, because at that stage there were no networks really for us to put these devices on, so we. We sort of abandoned the end device products, and we focused a bit more on the network. So we came up with a different way of rolling out these types of networks. At that sort of time, we were looking for funding to try and build this.
When was this, by the way?
This was 2016.
Yeah, right. 2016.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've been undercover for quite a while now, we applied for some money at the Technology Innovation Agency. That's when we met our other. I wouldn't say necessarily a co-founder, but we see him like that. And he was at the Technology Innovation Agency at that time, and he said, "Look, why don't you pivot this into the broadband space, because you could actually solve the broadband problems a lot more efficiently with our approach than the IoT networks." So we actually scrapped IoT altogether.
Right.
Partly where we got our name, right? The rest was history. We were 2 years undercover in doing our tech development at the incubator, and then eventually we moved into the bowels of a company here in Randburg, into the basement, and we sort of built our first prototypes there.
Okay, amazing. And this is a commercial for-profit business, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. So Moses, take us through the technology development lifecycle. You started in the IoT space, abandoned that later, and then pivoted into broadband. But how much of the IP around this has been developed by Riot itself?
So just a little bit of history in terms of like how we we actually came together. I'll just amplify on what Jared has just spoken about right now. So when I was still a student at WITS, I used to run a software development interest group. I called it Soft Dev Interest Group, where a lot of like students were coming in there to learn different technologies that I was teaching on the weekend. And eventually I ventured into turning that into students coming in, and then we built like real project for things that they can be used for the environment that I was working at VET. So I was looking for, at the advent of like IoT, I was playing around with like some Fitbits, and but I was not a hardware person.
Okay.
So I was looking for people who can do hardware so that we can merge and then I'll handle the software side of things. But I couldn't find any. So I resorted going to my lecturers, and one of those was Richard, whom actually is a good friend with Jared. Mm-hmm. And he gave me their details, and then I tried to contact the guys. They never replied to my email. And years later, back in 2015, 2016, I met them at Tsimulohong, where they had some sort of like a maker space where they were doing all the stuff, mm-hmm. and hardware stuff. And I, because I was fascinated by just seeing the stuff that was in their, like, it's just a bunch of products on shelves. And then I got in there and I started speaking to Daniel as to what they're doing. Can they teach me how to play around with hardware? And Daniel started putting together some Arduinos and then showed me. And I asked, can you not do this in Python? And Jared jumped in and said, you can do that because it's a Python component. Okay. From there, we started... I started seeing things on their walls saying Bushfund Labs. And I'm like, what is that? Are you guys Bushfund Labs? Yeah. Like, I sent you an email years ago and you didn't respond to it. And we started...
the universe brought us together.
Exactly. And from there, we started doing hackathons and then other things and then working on some other products. And when this opportunity came through, we I was running soft dev company, which was my company that I was developing bespoke software for different small businesses. Mm-hmm. So we decided that like they abandoned Bushfund Labs, I abandoned soft dev, and mm-hmm. then we came together to form Riot.
Riot Networks.
Yeah. And that's how actually we came to be.
So the IoT in Riot is actually originally from Internet of
Things.
Exactly.
So it's radio.
Radio. Okay.
Yes. So Riot just by chance. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. Actually, the approach was also quite appropriate because we take more of a complex approach to building networks. So sort of using agent-based models and using breaking it up into small bits, mm-hmm. and relying on more emergent behavior. So a Riot actually follows that sort of behavior where you have lots of individuals forming this emergent behavior, getting things done. Mm-hmm. So it was, and then there's also a bit of disruption it mixed into this. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, take us through the product development lifecycle. What technologies you were using initially, and how you ended up with the tech that you've deployed today in Aluvinote Bosch.
Yeah. So as Jared was saying, we started in the IoT space, mm-hmm. and because the kind of products that we were trying to build for our clients there wasn't a cheaper way of actually having a network that will support those products. Mm-hmm. And we started building a lot of base stations and then all those sort of things. And eventually we started realizing that, like, hang on, if for the products that we're building, if eventually this is going to be used by people, somehow they would need to be connected to the internet. Mm-hmm. So that's when we actually started pivoting and focusing more on providing internet access to the household, because by doing that, the rest of the other things can come in and plug into that.
Understood. Yeah. But Jared, you looked at TV white spaces spectrum originally. Why did you not decide to go down that path?
Yeah, so we were looking at ways of alternative ways of rolling out the network where we don't have to rely necessarily on the big operators to put the infrastructure down first. So we were trying to use as much of the unlicensed spectrum as possible. So your ISM band, your white space. So we actually built our first device, which is a white space radio.
Okay.
Very low cost. I think we were sitting at about 3,500 rand for a white space radio when that sort of equivalent tech was over 100 grand at the time.
Wow.
So we built that all locally. We got links over very long distances. We worked with the CSIR, integrating into their GLSD, and we did a bunch of trials. And that's sort of when the business side started kicking in, and we said, okay, well, how does this solve the problem? And we realized that it actually wasn't necessarily that we didn't have coverage or we didn't have these networks. It was actually just an affordability problem.
Okay.
So we ditched the TV white space, and we focused mostly on ISM band, so 2.45 gig.
Those are the, just for people to know, ISM bands are the unlicensed radio frequency spectrum bands that are typically used by Wi-Fi.
Yeah, industrial, scientific, medical bands. Mm. So these are unlicensed bands, which we use our Wi-Fi, all your little Bluetooth devices, they all run in those bands. You don't have to pay licenses for them.
Yeah. But there is the downside of using it is there is sometimes congestion.
Lots of congestion. Yeah. So you have to, there's a lot of tricks you have to play to actually get, firstly to comply. So you have to comply with regulation very, very strictly, very low power. So you can't have massive networks. And then the congestion is the biggest problem, which we've done a lot of innovation to get around.
Okay. And make a lot of people think because it's not licensed that it's unregulated, but that's not true.
Highly regulated. Mm-hmm. So you have to comply with the ICASA type approval. You have to make sure that your power is within certain limits, that you're not denial of service to your sort of your peers, mm-hmm. also using the same sort of bands. There's a lot of regulation there.
Okay. So the technology, Moses, that you've deployed here is a mesh network. Just describe what this mesh looks like and how it works exactly.
So basically what we have is that we actually deploying clusters in form of which build their own sort of mesh networks. Mm-hmm. So we've got three types of devices, which is the gateway. That's the one that is actually connected to directly connected to the internet. And then that gateway distributes to other nodes that we call core nodes that form the mesh network. Mm-hmm. And then those mesh network, those core nodes, actually each and every one of those distribute to about seven other household devices that we call leaf nodes.
So how many homes are connected in a cluster?
So we're averaging 56 households per cluster.
Okay. So the gateway node, which connects to the internet, where is that housed and what does it look like?
It looks like any other house. Mm-hmm. So
it's inside someone's house.
Yes, it's inside someone's house. So these things, they are deployed. All of them, all of our devices are deployed in people's houses. Okay.
We'll put some pictures up on the screen just to show people what these look like. But there's an antenna on the roof that then connects into the gateway node in one cluster, and then there are multiple core nodes, which also have antennas on the roof. How would you describe them? What must look like little square white boxes?
Yeah, so it's little square patch antennas that in each and every core node have a 360-degree coverage.
Okay.
So each and every core node can see each and every one depending on the line of sight that they have to each other. And when we install them, we do make sure that they do have line of sight to each other.
Okay.
And in that way, they form their own little mesh cluster, which is supplied by one gateway that has access to the internet.
Okay. And then from the core nodes, you also have what you call leaf nodes.
Yes.
Where does the word leaf come from?
So basically, if you're looking more onto the a tree. It's more like a network. Mm-hmm. You have a trunk, mm-hmm. You have branches,
right.
And you have leaves.
Okay.
So you can look at the gateway more as a trunk, mm-hmm. The branches more as the core nodes, mm-hmm. and the leaves as more like the smaller devices at the edge of the network.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Okay.
And so it's like this when you look at a tree, you don't say, the only thing that is alive here, it's a leaf or a branch or the whole thing as a tree, it's alive. And then when you look at a cluster, it actually represents the tree, which is actually alive. And then what supplies water to the branches and to the leaves is actually the trunk, which when you look at it, it's sort of like the the gateway, because it's the one that is actually supplying the internet to the whole cluster.
Okay, okay. So you've deployed this in Olievenhout-Bosch, which is a large township area next to Centurion. I believe you've also got a smaller deployment at Nasrec here in Johannesburg. Yes. Why did you choose Olievenhout-Bosch specifically as a region to go into?
So,
one,
that's one. But when you look at Olievenhout-Bosch, it's one of the places that represents the whole of South Africa. You can find the whole of South Africa in Olievenhout-Bosch.
Okay.
And I mean, you've seen when you traveled with us on that tour.
Yes.
That we took you from the high LSM bracket type households to the lowest of the lowest LSM bracket type household.
Literally, but we saw a core node on a shack.
Yes. and that actually shows you the urgency at which people are requiring internet, because that shack that you saw with the core node actually installed in it. Mm-hmm. We didn't install it. Mm-hmm. So that was just one of like our customers who were staying in another area. And fortunately, he had a gateway. So because when we started initially running the free trial, we experimented with a whole lot of gateways in one cluster, because like that was a free trial. So he could take that gateway and move it somewhere else. So when he moved from extension 19 to extension 27, we were actually slow in trying to come back in and resuscitate his network. Mm-hmm. And he did it himself. And 2 days later, I got a call from him saying, "Hey, look, I'm sorted. No, thanks." And I'm like, how, I mean, you have a core node. You said you stay in a shack. We can't be able to, we're still working the solution. Yeah. Like, no, I've done it. Don't worry.
Well, and we actually got some video clip of his name is Matthews Mofokeng.
Yes.
And we have a video clip of him relaxing in the back of, I think, a broken down car parked next to his shack.
Yeah, he's improvising all the time.
Yes, and he'd mounted his smartphone in the back of the vehicle. It was a very hot day, we must say. It was about 35 degrees.
Exactly.
In his home, it was far too hot for him to be
inside
the house. So he was in the back of this vehicle, and he was watching Netflix on his phone connected to this network, uncapped data. So let's go and have a look at what Matthews Mofokeng was doing. Right, I'm here with Matthews Mofokeng, who is a resident of Olievenhout-Bosch. Matthews, tell us about this node that you have on top of your house here, and I believe you put it up yourself.
Yes, I've put that thing myself, because I was using it at Extension 19 now when I came here, and just installed it for myself.
Okay, and so what are you able to do with this internet connection?
That internet is good.
Yes. You're watching Netflix in your vehicle here?
I'm watching Netflix now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And it works well? Streams well? No problems?
Yes, no, there's no problem.
Okay. And do you make money out of this? Are you able to resell the internet to other people?
Yeah. I'm making money.
Okay. Is it good money? Just tell us a bit about it and how you bring other people on board, how other people use the internet connection here?
I'm making a lot of money. Then.
You're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. So you're a businessman. You're making a business out of selling internet.
Yes.
Well, thank you for your time. Thank you. So, Jared, as you saw in that video there, Mr. Mofokeng is making a living, or maybe a partial living, out of reselling internet access here. Just talk us through the business model and how you're involving the community here.
Sure. So actually, we really rely on our users to do a lot of the rollout, the operation of the network. So we've created a model called the user-operated network infrastructure model, where we rely on residents to install the network, to onboard customers. Our core and gateway operators, actually, they look like little hyper-localized ISPs. So they even resell, and then they participate in the revenue. So they take about 15% of the revenue from their little cluster, and then all the maintenance is done locally. So what's really important there is that a lot of the neighborhoods that we roll out don't even have, they're no street names yet. Mm-hmm. So to send an external installation crew to come and do this, they'll never find where these places are. And there's a lot of social dynamics which have to be considered. So you might need to really comply with who's sort of in charge in that, mm-hmm. that neighborhood. Those are typically your gateway and core nodes. You might have tenants in your backyard, which would be more your leaf nodes. Mm-hmm. So we really do leverage the crowd. Actually, our product's called CrowdNet. So the project is really about how do we involve the community in the user, in not just being a user, but also being an operator in the infrastructure and really participating in the whole value chain. Mm-hmm. So we don't see ourselves as an ISP, really. We don't have an ambition to be an ISP. We're a tech company. So we're sure. trying to really just build the appliances and the platforms for people that are living in very low-income neighborhoods to go and build, operate, maintain these networks themselves and really aggregate so that they look like a much higher-tier customer. And our value proposition to the ISPs is that we can present a group of these households, aggregated group of households, as a top-tier customer, mm-hmm. So that these households can access much cheaper and high-capacity data.
Okay, so you might have 50 households, but to the ISP, it actually looks like one house in the suburbs, for example.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So that group, that cluster, we can overlap clusters, so there is a bit of benefit to having them, and we can offload traffic between the different meshes. But really, one cluster is sharing a minimum 100 meg uncapped line. Mm-hmm. Usually we use business connection, so your peak in a business connection would be in the middle of the day.
You're right.
Where our peak is in the morning and in the evening. So it complements each other very, very well.
Yeah.
We can sort of sweat that infrastructure that's already out there, that's
yes.
already covering these neighborhoods. We can yeah. really wring out as much data as possible and present new customers to these ISPs and extend their reach.
So Moses, what has the reaction been in the communities? Are you finding people are coming to you and saying, we've got to have one of these core nodes? And in the surrounding areas of the communities where you've deployed already, what are you seeing people from the community coming forward and saying, no, we need to extend this over here as well?
Yeah. So basically, in the communities that we operate in, you find that we're learning so much. We've put the tools down to mm-hmm. start building this thing, and they taking those tools and then using them differently, sort of like showing us that like, oh, you said we need to use these tools this way. No. Actually, that's not the way. We use them this way, and we learn from them and then pivot very quickly as to like how they work. I mean, mm-hmm. Jared just alluded now to the fact that we don't go out to the customers and ask them to want to use our internet. Mm-hmm. People come to us, and then initially we were chasing people and then trying to find customers that will participate in the trial and all those.
This is weird device on there.
Exactly, weird device, and you would see that like there are different colors because some people were used to mock the early adopters and telling them that like you have this thing that looks like an apostolic church thing in your house, and like the household is like, don't you have different colors? And then initially we built a couple of different colors, but that thing didn't fly. Once yeah. people started realizing that, like, oh, this thing, it's actually working, it was neither here nor there what the color is.
Okay.
So the communities that we are very much intertwined with the community. So as Gerard alluded to, the fact that like we call it a crowd net. Mm-hmm. It's not only the community that are part of the crowd. We as Riot as well, we're part of the crowd. So that feedback loop as to what we built for them and then what they how they use it keeps on pivoting all the time. So the communities that we operate in actually form part of like they are the fabric of what Riot mm-hmm. is offering.
In the longer term, how involved do you think Riot is going to be need to be on the ground? To what extent do you think the community will be actually able to do the deployments themselves? Would you get involved perhaps in setting up the gateway node and then the rest of the infrastructure simply gets deployed by the community?
I think in the long term, we will be more focused only in operating the platform.
Okay.
And these things, people are already doing it themselves. We're just slowly or rather quickly adopting to what changes they bring about that we need to solidify in our processes and all those sort of things. So for now, those are the kind of things that makes us be in the ground.
Okay. Jared, are you surprised at all about what people are actually using the connections for?
Yeah, actually, in the beginning, we didn't anticipate that people would be doing streaming on it. We thought it would mostly be like your WhatsApp and sort of Facebook, TikTok, things like that. And we didn't have an ability to, because it's got a captive portal in the beginning. You have to sign in, and then you've got your internet for the month. So we didn't have an ability to access that on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of our users said to us, look, can we connect our smart TVs or our TV box? So they'll have analog TVs and put a little dongle on to turn it into a smart TV. Can we put this on the network? And we said, no, we're inundated with Dev at the moment, but we'll get to it. And then eventually we did a few visits, and then we see there's TVs that are busy streaming. and we ask our users, like, what's going on here? No, we figured out. We've got a hack, and we've got a way to get onto the captive portal and log in. And so actually, bulk of our users are using it for streaming. You walk into a house, there's usually a TV with our little router right underneath the TV, and that's
okay.
the Hello World application for our internet.
So to some extent, it's similar to the demand that you're seeing in the areas where fiber's been deployed.
Exactly. Yeah. And like you said earlier, our users, some of them have bigger TVs than I have. They're streaming 4K quite comfortably.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. So, I mean, what sort of internet speeds are we actually looking at here? You mentioned, Moses, that you're bringing in at least 100 meg line into the gateway, and then it's distributed from there up to 50, 60 homes. That's bandwidth is all shared. What are users realistically seeing on the ground?
So one thing that is more important to realize is that in these clusters, there is a way in which it's part of the IP.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a way in which we optimize what we're getting from the internet service providers. And one more interesting thing is that actually people say that from them using, like, they will have a little router that they've gotten from some service mm-hmm. provider, and their experience, it's way much better on the Riot network than on the service provider that they were using before.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
we were puzzled a little bit because some of these people used to have like 50 Mac packages on like their routers, and like this, but then like we realized that like the thing that we catered for in the technology in terms of like how we do the distribution within the mesh cluster, it's what is actually catering for them having a much more better experience.
Actually, so we get the question a lot of what sort of speeds. Mm. Actually, beyond a certain point, the speeds are irrelevant.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
If you're going sort of anywhere from 5 to 10 meg. Plus, you don't notice. And what we've really tried to do in the network is not worry about speed. It's more about being uncapped and having as much data as you need. When we first did the trial, the free trial, where we just opened it up for anyone to just sort of all you can eat, use as much as you need, we found that the data consumption almost tracked the global average exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So we went from about a fifth of the world's average consumption monthly to almost the global average. And and usually when we do that, you see a sort of spike in the beginning, and then it plateaus to some sort of equilibrium. So we found that actually speed isn't the big thing. It's the ability to consume as much data as you need.
And at any time without having to worry about running out of it.
Exactly. So you can get about a minimum at peak time, about 5 meg is sort of the minimum. But you can go all the way up to the maximum capacity. So if you go late at night, you can get the 100 meg quite comfortably.
Okay. Okay. And what are people using it for apart from video? I mean, that's a very obviously a very popular application, but I mean, are you finding kids are using it for education? What are some of the other practical uses?
Yeah. So basically, if you look particularly in Olive and Wood Bosch, there's a lot of like public Wi-Fi hotspot. So people used to go there with their laptops, cell phones, books, and then all those sort of things. So people use it for education, I would say mainly, because most of the parents that actually, this is what is interesting. You find that like for 80-90% of the notes that we have in people's households is the kids that actually told the parents that like, I want that thing, you know? And how they go about it is because like these kids used to go into like these public library Wi-Fi hotspots and then they get marked, they get robbed. You can't use that thing when it's raining. You still have work to do. So mainly the stuff that it mainly gets used for, apart from video and all these TikToks and stuff, it's on the education, whereby kids are doing schoolwork, because in today, even a grade one, for them to be able to do their homework, they need internet access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, some of the early nodes that we set up, we had, so we can also create an outdoor hotspot on our devices. And during COVID, we had packs of kids who would congregate around some of these early nodes. And that was also how we knew that the Wi-Fi was working. And some of the ladies that hosted these nodes would allow the kids into their yards because they were worried about their safety. And actually, a few of those nodes are now little creches, because they found there's a little business model there, exactly. Aftercare, and now they're even doing tutoring. So the kids will come do their homework there after school.
Yeah.
But the idea really is to get all the households, so all the kids can actually do their work in their own home at night when you're supposed to be in your home. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask about crime. Lievenhout Bosch is a high crime area. In fact, I was doing some research about the township, and people are frightened to go out of their homes after sunset because of the crime situation there. Have you had any issues with crime and your gear being stolen off rooftops and equipment? And if not, why not?
Not even one.
Not one?
Not one.
In 3 years.
In 3 years, not even one.
Why?
I think that... And I'll tell you why. I think that like the community there, when you give a this forms a sense of community. This Wi-Fi, it forms a sense of community amongst people. People understand. They know that like you are the one who's especially the leaf node people. Mm-hmm. They know that like you, your core node, you see this thing is actually pointing at your house. You are providing me. Mm-hmm. What is fun is that like, if that core node goes down for whatever reason, before they even pick up the call, the phone and call Riot, they rush to that household. Hey, is that thing on? Because my internet is not working. You know? So that forms that sense of community. And if you are a core node and you find that like you're for some reason you can't connect, mm-hmm. you quickly jump and go. The things I'm telling you, it's real stories. They mm-hmm. go to the gateway owner and say, it's your internet up. Mine is not working, and mine depends on yours. Mm-hmm. You know, so by
3 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly.
So ownership, actually, the ownership is a very important ingredient of this network.
Right.
If you let people participate in that whole value chain, then that ownership starts kicking in, and people won't vandalize. Actually, in extension 19, there's a cell tower. One of our funders runs that tower, mm-hmm. and they're getting vandalized every 2 weeks. The batteries are being stolen. Where we get nothing. So I think that the idea now is also to try and show the dependence of the gateway nodes on that tower, mm-hmm. To try and even protect that infrastructure. So really, there's a lot of social engineering mm-hmm. that's involved to look after the infrastructure, mm-hmm. and I think it'll extend even to our ISPs.
Yeah.
And I can tell you now, initially when we started billing, we haven't built up the system for billing our customers, so we're collecting money cash. So
door by door, knocking on doors.
So people knew. I mean, like, we did it for about 3-4 months, collecting money cash while we were building mm-hmm. the system, and people knew that like Moss have money in his pocket. He's just you know, it's between the one and the first and the seventh, mm-hmm. he's going to come and collect. When you see him running around, he's collecting. But you know, it was a little bit of a joke, but that showed me the understanding and the seriousness of the thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Because there's a bunch of guys sitting in the corner there, and I'm like, we know you have that little bit of cash mm-hmm. with you there, but no, don't worry. As long as you make sure that thing is working, you sort it, you know. So I think the reason why we never had theft or anything, it's because this network forms a sense of community, mm-hmm. you know, by the way in which like it operates, mm-hmm. you know. I don't care that like we're neighbors and we don't like it each other. If this thing points at your node, you know you're getting paid from me. If I don't pay my internet if I don't pay my subscription as a Leaf node, mm-hmm. you as the connode owner who is my neighbor that we don't like each other, you still depend on me to get that little bit of, like, to make up that 15% of revenue that you get monthly.
Yes.
So it forms that's, and I know of examples that we can tell you that, like, these two, they're not, but...
So people end up leasing each other.
Exactly. Okay. But then, like, based just on the fact that, like, they are providing services to each other, they can communicate, they can... And it slows things down. Mm-hmm. And people operate more as a community than in silos. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the reason why we never even had one note stolen. There was only one that we lost, but it was due to fire. Because actually that guy, Lovers, Matthews, is yes. the one that his shirt bent down. The guy that that's with right. the, yeah, yes. his shirt bent down. Mm-hmm. And then that's the only way we lost the equipment.
Okay.
But he gave it back to us and gave him new equipment. Mm-hmm. But that's the only way. That's the only one that we know of that we have lost.
And I believe, I mean, load shedding is an issue as well, and telecommunications networks require electricity, although I believe your network is actually quite undemanding when it comes to electricity consumption. But I believe that some of the core node operators are actually investing in backup power solutions to keep the network running themselves.
Yes. So basically, initially, we did experiment in Extension 36. Actually, the equipment is still there, mm-hmm. whereby when it's load shedding, they don't actually get load shed. We experimented with little backup powers that we put into these things, and then it worked quite well. And people, one thing that we noticed, and then for us to put that is, was to actually differentiate and then try to see during load shedding, what would it be like how would a cluster perform during load shedding and then just during normal times when there's electricity. Mm-hmm. And we started to realize that, like, there isn't that much different. Like, why? But it's because people are putting up these backup powers themselves. Mm-hmm. And so when the power goes off, they've got a couple of batteries inside the house. They plug it. They plug the core node into their grid and then keeps moving. In fact, when I did a research on this thing, which initially we thought, oh, this is a huge problem, like backup power on these things. We did the research and we found mm-hmm. out that, like, no, actually people prioritize that being online more than anything else when there's load shedding. So,
yes.
And also, again, that speaks again to the agency of people having these types of infrastructures that supports them having mm-hmm. access to the internet.
Okay.
So, water, electricity, internet.
Exactly. Exactly.
You need those three things.
Yeah. we're gonna cut away in a moment to another member of the community, Lizzie Ndewa, who is who runs the Stebeli creche in Olievenhout-Bosch. But Moses, tell me a bit about Lizzie and her operation.
Yeah. So Lizzie is one of like our customers, mm-hmm. and
she's running a core node.
Yeah, she's running a gateway.
A gateway, okay.
Yes, she's very important.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Lizzie is one of like the community members whom is a chairperson for all the creches in Olievenhout-Bosch.
Okay.
So she's the one who interfaces between the department and the community there. Mm-hmm. And she's one of like the she's a principal of her own creche, mm-hmm. and she just heard about us when we were rolling out this thing. She was paying, I think, 700 grand on the package that she had with some service provider.
Okay,
and she said, because like we were still charging 80 bucks at that point in time, like mm-hmm. 80 bucks. This mm-hmm. is, and this is one of them. By the way, sorry, this is one of like the things that when we're rolling out in a new place, people tend to think that like we're a scam, right? But she took the risk and said, no, I've seen it work somewhere, mm-hmm. but can you please bring it to me? And then we brought it to her. So what tends to happen there is that like Lizzie has teachers. She's the principal of the creche. Mm-hmm. So she has teachers, but those teachers, they do online classes with UNISA. They write exams and then they attend all these things. And that internet that she had at her home was mainly for, and that's the reason why she was paying more, because bigger package.
Yes.
She was catering for everything else she was doing there. So also here as the chairperson of like that all the creches in Olivan, she communicates with the whole, so she needs to be
mm-hmm.
Connected at all times,
right,
and we put up this thing at her house and it worked so perfectly. She paid the 80 bucks first month. Second month was like, are you guys not going to come back and tell me that like I owe you more? And I'm like, no, keep on using it and you will see. And what happened is that like she started seeing that like, hang on, this thing is working. So she started telling the parents of like the kids that she has, that like, hey, look, mm-hmm. you know what? As parents, I think you need internet access in your homes. Here are these guys that I'm paying 80 bucks, trust me. So it's word of mouth, mm-hmm. you know, so they trusted her.
Yeah.
And from there, she just turned into being one of our community liaison officer, because everyone else, when they want internet, instead of falling right, irrespective that like she's shared our numbers on like their WhatsApp groups and they go to her, you know, and she packages things like all the proof of residences,
right.
copy of IDs and stuff.
And you must and welcome that because it makes your life easier.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. And
crowdsourcing.
That's crowdsourcing, yes. So, so Lizzie plays that role.
Okay, well, let's hear from Lizzie. And she told me about how she's using Pinterest with the kids to do some interesting stuff. So let's have a look at that.
Right, I'm here with Lizzie Ndewa. She is head of the Stembile Early Learning Center in Olivan Heights Bush. Lizzie, hello.
Hello, thank you.
So tell me about the Riot internet connection that you have here at the creche and what it's meant for you.
Riot is helping me a lot. Why? Because when we usually doing some plannings of the kids, when we're supposed to teach them, we just use a Riot to Google. Mm-hmm. Yes, we use an internet to Google whatever we want to Google, so that we will have a right curriculum for the kids, especially on art. We also Google it on Pinterest. We get into Pinterest, and Pinterest is an interesting program for the kids.
Okay.
Yes. So a lot of things that we are doing here, it's a lot of things that we are doing here. It's like when we search everything, every plan that we're supposed to do, we just go to Google. Okay. We are using a Riot. It's helping us a lot, and it's so affordable. And I've also transferred a lot of people here. Some of the parents, when they come here, they want to see, they just ask that, what about that one? What is that? And then I'm just telling them that one is an internet which connects all the phones in your yard, and everyone can have an internet just because of that Riot.
Okay. You have a node here, not just internet access, so you can provide connectivity beyond just your own house or beyond the creche. Maybe just explain to us how you are on-selling capacity to other people in the community.
Yeah, on other people, you know, I just introduce them and telling them about the interesting and the affordable of the Riot. Mm-hmm. So they just like it. All my neighbors here are connected.
Okay.
Yes.
Through all your connection.
Yes, through my connection. So actually there's no more place where they can say maybe this one don't have it. A lot of people, and here in Olivan, I think Riot must fit in all Olivan.
Okay.
We need it here. The whole Oliven need it. As I am in a group of Oliven Wood Bosch, all extensions, and then I'm advertising there also. I think a lot of people have called them, wanted to go and connect them with with Rayo, as they've told me that they are now at extension 27 and extension 60, and some of the people up there, they're still in need of it. I'm still having a list of those people also that need to be connected.
Okay. Yeah. And how important is it that it's completely uncapped, that you can use as much data as you want without running out of data, like you do on a mobile network, for example?
You know, as myself, as a crutch, I was using a lot of data. I was losing more than 200 rands a week.
Wow.
So since I've used this Riot, it's so amazing.
Because how fast is it? What sort of connection speeds do you get?
Sorry?
How fast is your internet connection?
Yeah. My connection, it's very, very fast. Mm-hmm. It's not slow. Sometimes it was slow. It was very slow when I was having only one node here. Mm-hmm. And then they fixed it and they put the other one that side, so that we both connected, being connected, and then it was working very, very well. Now it's working very fine.
And
anymore.
And what do you think has been the impact on the community of having access to uncapped internet?
Yeah, it has helped a lot of people, because people, they were suffering with the data. Mm-hmm. Yes, now at least they can spend and use their money for other things, no more in data. Yes.
Well, Lizzie, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for speaking to me.
You are welcome, sir. You are welcome.
So, Moses, you heard Lizzie there saying that the whole of Leeuwenhoek needs to be connected. How far are you from that? What are your ambitions for expansion?
We need to flood the whole of Oliven, and we need to paint it blue. Mm-hmm. The rest of Oliven Wood Bosch, right now I can say we are actually covering about 30% of the community.
That's a lot, because it's a big, big township.
Yes. So, I mean, extension 36, extension 15, extension 13, extension 27, extension 37, extension 19, extension 60. So we have covered quite a big chunk of the area. But in terms of the head count, mm-hmm. I think we are about 30% in, and we are rolling out faster now.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be doing probably over the next 18 months, there'll be another 6,000 households. So we're busy doing a fundraise at the moment to expand. Mm-hmm. We'll do another 6,000 households. And we're aiming to get to about 20,000 in that period. So.
Wow. Yeah. So I was going to ask about the financing behind this. Are you at liberty to disclose your financial backers are?
Yeah, so actually, because we're quite a capital-intensive operation, we actually rely quite a lot on grants and donations. So especially now that we're in very low volumes, we build all the equipment here locally, and we are not at economies of scale yet, so the devices are still kind of expensive. So what a number of our funders and backers have done is they've taken their ED and SED grants and donations and given it to us, and we've flowed it straight through to the household. So we basically just pay for the equipment at cost, and we put it on people's rooftops to get over that little hurdle, and then the households are able to pay their monthly subscription. So we've had right now, we're probably sitting at about 20 million bucks that's been donated from businesses, big businesses.
Wow.
That have, and what's really great for them is that we can quantify the impact. So mm-hmm. we can show every rand that's spent, which household it ends up in, and every month we can give you a report of how much data that household's using, and you can go and visit them, and they'll tell you exactly what they're using it for. So really the impact has been quite an important aspect of our fundraising.
But a point you made is when we were visiting Oliven was that this is not a charity.
No, not at all. So our ambition now, so we need to get beyond the sort of 10,000 a month hurdle, mm-hmm. which is quite a big hurdle. But once we get past that hurdle, our devices should be cheap enough that you can just buy them in a retail store.
Okay.
And at that point, we will still probably continue with the ED, SED grants, just really for the ultra low income. Mm-hmm. But then households that are sort of in your 3,000 to 6,000 rand a month household income, you can buy that device. It'll be very similar to like a satellite TV set-top box.
Okay. Do you find the satellite TV installers are going to pivot into this? Have they started pivoting into doing this work?
Actually, yeah. That's where all of the installations are happening now.
Exactly. Yeah. So all of our installers come from, that's their background.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, are they taking down the DSTV dishes at the same time?
Not yet, but I think we're transitioning into the streaming quite comfortably. So
yes.
Especially in Extension 60, where the houses are relatively new, mm-hmm. there aren't many dishes up there, but everyone's streaming. So,
some people are getting access to pay TV for the first time via streaming rather than traditional satellite.
Exactly, yeah.
Fascinating. And the $99 a month you're charging, is that feasible in the long term? Do you think you could even possibly drive that price down?
Yeah, so it's actually very important for us. So we've looked at the income distribution in the country. If you compare countries where people are using above the global average, so like India, for instance, data costs less than 2% of your gross national income per capita. So our goal was really to sit in that sort of 2 to 4% of a household income, which sits in this sort of 100 rand range. So we don't want to ever exceed 100 rand. We have looked at other packages which will go smaller than that, but right now for $99, you can have 3 concurrent devices in a household, all you can eat data. And then as we get bigger, we'll look at the public hotspots, but right now our focus really is on wireless to the home, really inside your home.
And just to add one more, Jared was saying, on public hotspots, it will mainly be for businesses. So we're not necessarily really looking at public hotspots, running them in people's households, because that's one of the problems that made us look into this model of like the household model, where actually Jared has a very nice analogy of toilets.
Public toilets, yeah. So you'll find there's maybe 100 households sharing a public toilet and 100 households sharing a public Wi-Fi hotspot. We see them as very similar types of utilities, and you should have a toilet in your own home, you should have your own internet in your own home. So that our goal is to do the internet side, try and get that.
Funnily enough, we on our trip, we saw several toilets with leaf nuts attached to them.
That's actually the one of the few places that you can mount, that's a solid mounting point, so we do use some of the public toilets to mount nuts on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fascinating. So what comes next? Your main focus now is 11 Nights Bush. Have you identified other areas that you want to expand into? And are you able to disclose at this stage where you're likely to go next?
We're going to stick in Gauteng for a little bit. And then we're looking further north, so into the provinces further north of us. But right now we really want to just try and stick close to home. We're looking, I can tell you, in Diepsloot, in Cosmo City, Zandspruit. Those are quite close to our operations,
right.
And we can leverage our existing infrastructure for that. The fundraise we're busy doing right now is to really scale up into other provinces, so we can have footprints there and be able to support it in a very lean and scalable way. So right now we'll focus mostly on Gauteng, and then Limpopo will probably be next.
And will you look at licensing your IP potentially? Because I imagine there's a vast market across the rest of Africa for this as well.
Yeah, so we've had actually a lot of interest from all the way up to Rwanda, but we have to keep focused, and it's very distracting to go into these places, and there's also very different dynamics which you have to consider and try and build back into the technology. So for now, we've fallen in love with the South Africa problem, and this is what we want to try and solve. And then I think in a couple of years we might be ready to go beyond the borders, particularly in our neighbouring countries. The problem is the same, and it'll scale quite quickly into those areas.
Now there are quite a lot of initiatives focused on delivering low cost internet into low income communities, and we've seen particularly some of the fibre operators, interestingly, looking to deploy. We've had Vuma Keys initiative in Alexandra, and I think in Kayamandi and Stellenbosch as well. There's Fibre Time, I think, also deploying a pilot in Kayamandi. Lots of interesting models being tested out there. Moses, do you think wireless? I mean, what do you think of what the fibre guys are doing? Do you think the wireless makes more sense economically in deploying into these areas?
Yeah. So. Basically, so when you look at what really differentiates, because like your question speaks more to that. So when you look at what differentiates Riot in the marketplace, it's two things. It's the price and the technology. But what is more apparent to the end user and everyone else is the price. Now, on the technology, we can, when we start serving areas that cannot be served right now, it's the only time when like the technology that has to do with or technologies that has to do with providing access to the internet to the people can start shining. And that's where basically we come in, because when we build this technology or these technologies, we're more focused on, so these areas are upfront to us. This is what we're targeting. Mm-hmm. We want to solve problems in this type of areas. So in terms of like the on the technology side of things, in terms of like the types of technologies that we working on, are targeting those areas. And eventually, if you can solve the problem in those areas, cascading down, it's much more easier. Mm-hmm. Because at face value, what Riot is, that to the end user, it's not different to what the mobile service providers are or WISPs are. We're just the same thing, but what is more just more apparent to them is the price. We're a little bit more cheaper.
Yeah.
But what they don't realize is the technology behind is the thing that is driving a whole lot of like these things. Mm-hmm. So, and that will get to be seen later on.
I think fiber is also quite complementary. So fiber obviously takes a long time to roll out, and you have to wait for that. Where with Riot, we can install a household every hour with two people.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't see it as competing. I think it's going to be complementary. So what the Riot technology really does is it paves the way, it proves the market, and can really set up the last quarter mile and justify these backhaul connections coming in. So the way I see it is that it'll probably start with your 5G fixed wireless, and then as the capacity starts to, or the demand on the capacity starts to increase, then we'll start proving market for big pipes to come in.
Okay.
Actually, 11ert, there's like six or seven big fibers that go underground there. And it's almost like this highway that goes under 11ert of data with no off ramps.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to build off ramps and really work with the fiber guys eventually.
Okay, that makes sense. So at the moment you're actually using 5G fixed wireless as the backhaul. Yeah. Comsol is one of your partners, right?
Yeah. So we've just done we're busy with extension 60 with Comsol.
Mm-hmm.
We also have another ISP, Wirralink. So they do the fixed wireless,
okay.
Actually, it's been pretty successful with them. We've also done some other trials with Centec. So Centec also, we did some trials in Nasrec with them. Really, the 5G now, 5G and fixed wireless seem to be the quickest route to getting this stuff deployed. Actually, our gateway nodes are 5G CPE, so you can really just put a SIM card in them and ship them, and they just activate as you put power on them.
I suppose in time, as this rolls out, the fiber guys will see the opportunity here and deploy to your...
We have SFP ports and Ethernet ports waiting to plug in. So.
Yeah. Great, and that will then just expand the size of the backhaul and presumably then just increase the capacity available to the end users in the township.
Exactly, yeah.
In fact... we just got a report from like one of like our service provider, Wirralink. Actually, we thought that like 100 Mac would be somewhere where we had to start somewhere.
Yes,
and it's proving to even the way in which like we're able to optimize the traffic in the cluster.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they're telling us that we're using only 25% of our capacity, which means like we can put on more.
Mm-hmm.
Our model says we can, on one cluster, we can do 57 households. However, what they're telling us especially on that cluster, one of the clusters that we're particularly talking about now, is that we've got about 80 households in that. However, they're telling us that like we're only using 25% of mm-hmm. the capacity. Mm-hmm. So it means we can expand a little bit more in our model.
And just lastly, I at first value, this looks like it's bad news for the mobile operators who traditionally have serviced these communities. Do you see this as a threat to the mobile operators? Do you think it potentially is complementary, Jared?
Yeah, actually, we that's why we were undercover for so long, because we were really careful not to step on toes. We don't want to be a competing technology. It really is a complementary technology. The idea is to take the existing infrastructure that's out there and connect it to people and present users which would never be customers to the existing ISPs. Mm-hmm. So, like I said before, we don't want to be an ISP. We want to work with all the ISPs and try and actually get new users for them. We don't want to step on toes and we actually want to make this work for everyone. Yeah. We rely on the ISPs and right. So our existence is tied to that.
Okay, okay, good. Well, Jared Becker is Chief Executive and Moses Mpofu is Chief Operating Officer of Riot Network. If anyone wants to learn more, your website's riot.network, right?
Correct.
Riot.network, go check that out. And thank you so much for a fascinating discussion. I can't wait to see how this develops.
Thanks, Duncan.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.